I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Some of your former Senate colleagues on the Judiciary Committee would go as far as to say that it's anti-democratic. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, if I say it's anti-democratic, then it gets
in a lot of trouble.
No, but it is. Its value system is different, and its respect for institutions is different, and in that sense, it is not as embracing of all. What I think the Constitution says, we hold these truths to be self, that all men and women are created equal, endowed by their creator. It's a uniqueness of America. We never fully lived up to it. We never walked away from it. And this court seems to say that no, that's not always the case. The idea there's no right of privacy in the Constitution, giving states power that we fought a war over in 1960. I just think it's, this is not your father's Republican Party.
Well, you know, he's right. This is not your father's Republican Party. It's not your father's Democratic Party either. These are different times. We are in 2023, not 1960 or 1860, which I think is what President Joe Biden was referring to when he mentioned the war fought over the rights that the states have under the Constitution, which, by the way, have always been part of the Constitution. Welcome, folks. You are listening to Larry Connors USA. It is Friday, June 30th, and again, 2023, not 1960 or 1860. I'm Susie Moore. I'm filling in for Larry while he is out of town, and I'm really honored and privileged to be doing that. In addition to our 6 p.m. program, you can watch us live every day at noon on Rumble. We appreciate you tuning in there. If for whatever reason you can't find us then or you can't sit down with us at noon, you can check us out later on. All you have to do is go to Rumble and look for Larry Connors USA or News Talk STL, and you will be able to bring us up. And again, whether you can sit with us at noon or go back later and watch, we just appreciate you tuning in. The other place you can go look for Larry's stuff and listen back to his show and see what else he's got going on is at his website. It's LarryConnorsUSA.com. And so that means there's multiple ways that you can watch and listen to this show, and we appreciate you doing so. Also, while you're at his website, be sure to subscribe and share. I know he will appreciate that. But back to President Joe Biden. So that was him talking with Nicole Wallace yesterday, Thursday, after the Supreme Court handed down its decision in the affirmative action regarding college admissions. And so he was discussing that ruling and just kind of giving his thoughts on why he disagreed with it. And as you could probably tell if you were listening, he maybe had a few things wrong, like, for instance, the fact that the words that he was quoting were from the Declaration of Independence, not the Constitution. Well, you know, I mean, at least he had the words mostly right. Addressing the idea of the Supreme Court not necessarily being a democratic institution, which, by the way, it's not. It's not designed to be a democratic institution. It's supposed to specifically be sort of protected from the whims of democracy and rather instead kind of bound to the rule of law, which is what they're doing, but the president is a great critic of that. Now, interestingly enough, after he had his sit down with Nicole Wallace there on MSNBC, when the segment was over, he decided to just go ahead and head out early.
Mr. President, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Nicole,
very much.
I appreciate
it's great
it,
to have you.
Thank you.
Don't go anywhere. It's a very exciting day around here. We'll have reaction and analysis.
Now, what you can't tell since you're listening, if you're listening on the radio and you're not haven't seen the clip yet, is when she's saying don't go anywhere, she's talking to the audience, but she could be talking to the president because sure as shooting, he shakes her hand, gets up, and walks off the set before the segment is done, which it was a very awkward moment. It's definitely worth the watch. Obviously, it's a brief clip, but I encourage you to go watch it. I'm sure that he's just used to, you know, he speaks at a podium and then he's done and he walks away from it, but I haven't really seen someone who's a guest on a sit-down television show just get up and walk out in the middle of the segment, but he did. So that was a little bit awkward. You know, it kind of highlights what we see day after day with our president, and sometimes it's comical, but more than anything, it's troubling because what you're seeing is moments that highlight both mentally and physically that he is in decline. You know, he is an 80-year-old man, and he's one who seems to be struggling a bit with both his mobility and his mental acuity in both respects, which might be a reason why RFK is onto something, doing the whole feats of strength thing with the bare-chested, you know, push-ups and bench presses. Gives a little contrast for anybody who may be on the fence about which of the two of them they may be voting for. But in any event, you know, despite the fact that the president on a daily basis kind of shows us that he's struggling a little bit, his press secretary, KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, wants to make sure that to insist that you pay no mind to the fact that the emperor has no clothes.
Maybe not directly, but shortly after the president had his sandbag stumble at the Air Force Academy, he's been using steps on Air Force One instead of the kind of truck that drives up. I'm wondering if that is that type, if it's to address, you know, he's had a couple incidents falling on the stairs getting up, and you guys just decided that it would be better for him. Can you walk me through what's going on there?
I don't have any decision process to walk through. I'm sure there's a protocol that's used for for Air Force One. I just don't have one. I mean, you guys see the president every day when we speak to mobility. The president always says, watch him.
Well, the thing is, we are watching him, and we're a little disturbed to see what we see sometimes. You know, it's part of the territory. I have a colleague at Red State, Andrew Malcolm, who just turned 80 last week. So he is of the same age as Joe Biden, and he's a pretty sharp guy. He writes a lot of VIP columns for us, which I encourage you to check out. In fact, the one that he wrote that ran today, it's a little commentary that he adds, but he has a written part of it that talks about age and how we all get older. But he also points out that interesting fact about our founding fathers, that, you know, Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, the one that Joe Biden was quoting from, was 33 at the time. George Washington and Paul Revere were old-timers in their 40s at the time our country was founded. James Madison was 25. Betsy Ross was 24. Nathan Hale, who regretted only having one life to give for his country, lost it at 21. Alexander Hamilton was barely legal at 21. And future Vice President Aaron Burr was only 20. And James Monroe, of the later Monroe Doctrine fame, had just turned 18 at the time our country was founded. So something to keep in mind here, folks. There's a little bit of difference, and I realize these are different times. It's almost 250 years later. We're living a little bit longer, but maybe we shouldn't be spending all of those twilight years trying to lead the country and maintain that power. It's kind of something to be thinking about. Now, you know, the reason that Biden was on with Nicole Wallace was to pan the Supreme Court decision yesterday on affirmative action in college admissions. And, you know, he wasn't the only critic of it. There were other Democratic critics of it, including RFK. But then, you know, there was a Republican reaction to it as well. And I want to hear what one of the presidential candidates had to say about it.
Affirmative action, goodbye. Is that something that you think might have a big impact going forward?
Well, in Florida, we have race blind anyways, and we've done that in our state university. We're proud of that. We judge on merit. We're not going to try to divvy you up by your skin color. That is the absolute appropriate decision for the country, and we're going to be much better off. What the left wants to do, they want to de-emphasize what unites us and exacerbate the divisions, and that's not healthy for society. So your grades, your activities, all that, yeah, let's judge people on their merits.
Why do you think the left uses race as such a billy club against Republicans?
Well, I think that they historically, the left, would try to use class, but that doesn't work for them anymore because the blue collar folks are with us by and large. And so they got to figure out how can they divide. And so race and trying to exacerbate those is the obvious things. And in Florida, we don't do any of the woke nonsense. And yet, I've had more African-Americans leading state agencies than any governor in the history of Florida. I've appointed 4 Hispanics to the Florida Supreme Court. I've appointed the first Jamaican-American, not because they checked those boxes, but because they rated the position. And that's how it should be.
That's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis weighing in with his thoughts on it. Obviously, he's running for president in 2024. And one of his fellow candidates, Tim Scott, also weighed in and said, you know, he was okay with the decision and kind of pushed back on some of the criticisms of it. But it wasn't just presidential candidates weighing in on the decision. You had the Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, Winsome Sears, giving us her thoughts on it as well.
We all want an opportunity. I don't want to go to a doctor because of the color of their skin. I want to know that the doctor is duly licensed, understands the human body, and can treat me properly. That's what I want. Now, if the doctor happens to be female, that's wonderful. And sometimes for some of us, you know, we'd like a female doctor from time to time. But generally, that's what we want. I mean, how can I take the bread out of an Asian child's mouth and give it to a black child and vice versa? We want all children to have an opportunity. That's what my father received when he came with only $1.75 in his pocket. And some people would say that he was back in the starting blocks while the white child was halfway at the completion line. But I would say to you, my father used education to get him where he is now, comfortably retired, an immigrant. And I'm saying we are overcomers. Black children are overcomers. The slaves did not die in the fields, so we could be saying in this century that we are victims, Martha. They would say to us, is that what we died for? No, we died for you to have an opportunity. Take it. You have that. We have had a black president. We have sitting in the White House, just about, I guess, in the vice presidency, a woman whose father came from Jamaica 2 years before my father came from Jamaica at the height of the civil rights movement. She's second in command. We have me. I'm second in command, Martha, in the former capital of the Confederate States. Have things changed? They have. And I say to our children, you are overcomers. Don't let anyone tell you you're a victim, because if you are a victim, that means you need a political savior. You don't need them.
That, again, was Lieutenant Governor of Virginia Winsome Sears kind of championing the idea that, rather than focusing on victimhood, maybe the focus needs to be on encouragement and encouraging people to overcome whatever obstacles may be in their way. And, you know, I think one of the things that's interesting is, you know, the fight gets, or the points get kind of mixed and lost in the discussion about this. People just sort of see the ruling and they don't really delve into what the Supreme Court was saying. But what they were saying was, look, you know, there are lots of variables that you can consider and should consider when you're determining who's going to be admitted to these colleges. Unfortunately, it is a zero-sum situation. You know, they can only admit so many students per year. So they have to pick and choose. They can't let everybody in. So one of the things that they can consider is people's background, people's experiences. Those are things, are all things that people can write about in their applications and inform the college admissions people, you know, what got them to this point and why they would be a good candidate to be part of that particular university. What they can't do is discriminate on the basis of race. And unfortunately, in a probably misguided effort to right a previous wrong, they were committing another wrong and they were discriminating on the basis of race. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. That's what our Equal Protection Clause says. That's what our documents say, and you have to abide by those. So you know what? Universities, colleges, they're going to have to adapt. They're going to have to find ways to, as I said, you know, take all different variables into account. And if they want a diverse student body from a racial perspective, well, find ways to do that. The pushback that you get here, and what I find, and I'm not alone in this, what I find troubling is the assumption that unless you discriminate based on race, you're not going to have candidates that are going to, you know, have the merit and be able to make it into these universities. Well, that's a pretty poor assumption. I don't know what that says about us other than it's a condemnation of our underlying education system. It means that our grade schools and middle schools and high schools aren't adequately preparing students, and apparently are doing so in a way that is particularly not advantageous to people of color. And maybe that's something that we really need to take to really dig in and look at. I know one of the things that Winsome Sears was talking about, being a key component here is school choice, the idea that we give people this opportunity to find the school that's the best fit for them, and that encourages our education system to improve, our institutions to improve, so that they can compete for those students and they can find ways to help them get to the point where they are eligible, to whether it's to get into Harvard or Mizzou, wherever it is. The bottom line is you don't fix a wrong with a wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right. That's a saying for a reason, and that's what the court seems to be doing here. We're going to talk more about the Supreme Court later on in the show because there were some big decisions handed down today as well. This is the last day of the session, and so they are done now. They'll have their summer recess before they start hearing arguments again in October. And there were several big cases handed down again today that we are going to discuss. But coming up, we're going to do something a little fun, a little different. The one and only Vic Porcelli is going to join me in studio. Now, regular listeners to News Talk STL know that I'm a regular guest on Vic's show. He's kind enough to have me on Friday mornings, and he gets to ask me all kinds of questions. And I know he has Larry come in and join him on Fridays, too, and he gets to ask him kind of questions. He sits in the interview chair, and he gets to ask us questions. Well, I thought it might be fun to have him come in and have him sit in the hot seat and me ask him a few questions. I haven't ever had a chance to interview Vic as many times as I have spoken with him in the past. So, coming up after this break, we're going to have Vic in studio. We're going to have some fun talking with him and getting his insights on, you know, what it's been like being here at News Talk STL for the past 2 years. So stick around, folks. We're going to be coming back right after this. Oh, well, you know what? That's the other thing. One of the things that I promised Larry I would do, filling in for him, is say his favorite saying, lock and load, ready on the right.
I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. I called a Wellington. A crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Not a yes, sir. Not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder, thunder, thunder.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Perfect music to introduce my next guest.
Why is that?
Just because it's not your type of music.
It's not.
Folks, I have got in studio with me Vic Porcelli. You're watching and listening to the Larry Connors USA show. This is Susie Moore filling in for him, and Vic Porcelli is joining me in studio today.
Susie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. So this is a little bit of a role reversal, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not used to this, but I'll do my best.
I know. I was thinking about it the other day, and I thought, you know, it might be fun to talk with Vic because I always talk with him, and he gets to ask me questions, but right. I don't get to ask him questions. So today,
that puts an interesting responsibility on you, though, right? You
does.
Never know what I'm going to ask
well,
you.
Well, this is true. I got to be careful, but I figure you're a pro. You've been doing this for a long time, so I have faith in you. So one of the things you've been doing for almost 2 years now is talking on the air at News Talk STL. And, you know, what is the takeaway you have from that? I know it was a big change in terms of the type of work you were doing. So
it was also a change from being unemployed to being employed. So
that's a positive, for sure.
I got to tell you, Susie, it's been 2 years. I'm still not sure I know what I'm doing. You know?
Well, you're winning awards.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Yeah, that was nice. I mean, that was a shocker, to be honest. And the only reason I say that is because, you know, my whole career has been, hey, 78 degrees in St. Louis. How you doing? Here's Eric Clapton. Wonderful today. You know? And that's it. 30 seconds or so. Now you got to sustain 15-minute breaks in an hour for 2 hours. Thank God I got Ken Williams, you know, to push me through everything. It was an adjustment.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I'm having some fun.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Good. You know, I don't think you're the only one having fun, though. First of all, I think guests have fun on your show. I can attest to that, at least personally. And I know that your fans and your audience have fun.
I appreciate
because
that,
they are,
Susie.
You know, they have their own name. They're Vic Heads.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, you've got, like, basically your own following, your big fan club.
Yeah.
So.
And I guess you know, I know you know, but that is taken from a couple of things, actually. One being this guy that I used to work with. Back in New Jersey, we worked at the station at the Jersey Shore. It was like a rock and roll rebel radio station, mm-hmm. No rules, play what you want. And our production director, Chris Cavallaro, who has recently passed away, He had pancreatic cancer, took him in 5 weeks, weeks. And he, always, whenever he sees me, he goes, hey, Vic Head, instead of calling me the other day.
Uh-huh. You know?
And partly from that and from my cousin Vinny, when she goes, it's called Disclosure, you Vic Head. So that's
love
how
it.
That's how that kind
love
of came
it. It's
about.
Perfect.
It is.
It's very fitting, and you know, people have kind of glommed onto that, and I think they are happy to call themselves Vic.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
No.
Oh.
Not weird at all.
Okay, great.
I think it's
fantastic.
Great. What's been the biggest adjustment for you?
The biggest adjustment to me is, okay, this is going to be weird. Okay, when I was in music radio for 40 years, Susie, I never said a political word. Not a word.
Right.
Because half of your audience are conservatives, half of your audience is liberal. Why would I piss off half of my audience? So, before this job, you go through any of my social media, not a political word, not one. Now,
get to let it all hang out.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. So, you know, my wife is such a great supporter and, you know, my biggest critic and my biggest fan. You know, she's been with me for the whole time. That I've been doing radio. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, now I got to go on and just, you know, be conservative. And all these people who knew me are going to hear me. She goes, just come out of the closet. Okay. Your gay friends are going to hate you. Your musical theater friends are going to hate you, you know, but that's what you do now. So that's what you do. So, you know, you start doing it and then you realize people that, you know, you should never judge, right? That people, especially musical theater people, there's so many of them that are conservatives.
Yeah.
That are coming and say, hey, it's great on your station. I'm like, wow, really?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. So that was an adjustment, coming out of the closet.
Yeah. Well, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate
be
that.
Be proud of that.
I am. I've always been proud to be a conservative. Don't get me wrong. It was clearly a business decision.
Sure. Well, you know, you made a wiser business decision than Bud Light did.
No kidding. Can I talk about him for a second?
Sure.
And this is, Ken and I have talked about this. I don't think he is really accurately called a transgender. He is what we used to call a transvestite.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had any surgery.
Well, he's had surgery, but not...
What kind of surgery?
Right, facial surgery.
Face.
Right,
that's,
exactly.
That's nothing to do with sexual anything.
Agreed.
So as far as sexual parts and boobs, he's got none of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, back in the old days, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show, I'm just the a sweet transvestite, right? So... And that word has kind of gone away. My wife says it's even like you shouldn't say that word.
Oh, I'm sure it's not politically correct anymore. I don't know why.
Somehow, this was years ago, somehow I missed the memo that the word Oriental was not cool to use anymore.
Yeah.
It had to be Asian.
Right.
And I said Oriental on the air, and somebody was like, you can't say that.
Right.
I'm like, well, we still get the Oriental Trading Magazine every month in the mail.
Right.
Right. It's still Murder on the Orient Express.
It is.
Right. So why can't I say it? So I think nobody uses the word transvestite, but I think that's what he is. So there's that. Second of all, why didn't Bud Light just be Bud Light? They just were Bud Light.
Yeah.
For years and years.
If you were riding high.
Yeah. And if you were straight, you bought it. If you were liberal, you bought it. If you were conservative, you bought it. If you were gay and a transsexual or a liberal, you bought it.
Right.
And then they blew it. Same thing as my formula for being on music radio, never saying a political word.
Well, you were much smarter than Bud Light.
Spuds McKenzie. here's to you, Mr.
The Bud Knight.
It was. I mean, that was all just fun. There was nothing conservative about those spots, but Spuds McKenzie.
Yeah.
You know, it was just fun.
Fun. Yeah. Just fun. Who's been the coolest interview for you?
Whew. Wow, that's tough. I got to tell you, Carrie Lake, who was pretty cool the other day, yesterday. Uh-huh. She was fantastic. I don't know. I mean, as far as celebrity goes, I don't know. But what I love to do, Susie, is to take somebody that you... Okay, here you go. Dr. Robert Malone.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I was so nervous to talk to him because he's a genius, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not. So, when I had to talk to him, I watched about 100 YouTube videos of him getting interviewed.
Mm.
Never saw him even crack a smile.
Oh, wow.
Right? So then during the interview, he says, things got really messed up. You know, I'd like to use some other words. And Ken played, "Don't you cuss on this here radio." And he chuckled a little bit at that. And then he was talking about CNN, and he goes, you know, CNN is, and on the third, I said, "Don't you cuss on this here radio." And he laughed hysterically. And Ken was like, "Oh, my God, I've never heard him laugh." Ken says that I... disarm people.
You do.
When they come on.
Yeah.
You know, but I know you.
Right.
You know what I mean? People I don't know how they're going to be.
Yeah, but it's comfortable talking to you, Vic. I mean, that's what comes across, is that you're genuine and you're just interested in talking to people and hearing what they have to say. It's not a gotcha thing. It's not anything other than just having a conversation, and that really kind of shines through.
And it's not coming from, I mean, look at the people we work with, Susie, mm-hmm. right? Mike Ferguson, I think he was born into a political, you know, nursery, right? Tim Jones, former Speaker of the House. Chris mm-hmm. Arps, unbelievable. Tony Colombo has been doing it for 20 years. And then there's me. So, I mean, I've been following it all these years, but not to a point where I could talk about it intelligently, you know.
Well, I mean, I think it's that sort of everyman quality, though. That's what people really, really kind of are drawn to.
Ken calls that the secret sauce.
The secret sauce.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for real. Yeah. What's your favorite segment you guys do on the show?
Oh, boy. I got to say probably toss up between Play Me Some Biden
mm-hmm.
and the Wheel of Audio Clips.
Those are good ones.
Because I listen to talk radio too my whole life, and people on Friday go, "Hey, let's listen to the audio clips of the week. Here was this person saying, you know," and they would play it, and I'm like, "Well, that's boring. I don't want to do that." So I said, "Let's spin the wheel," because we did that at the River when I was at the River with prizes. It was like, "Spin the wheel. Oh, I landed on this. You win this." So that's how we try. And I do love that.
I had to lug the wheel into the studio.
Yes, it's very heavy. I know. I appreciate that. And I also love my outro for that every week, which is help control the liberal population. Have your liberal spayed or neutered.
It's perfect.
Goodbye, everybody.
It's perfect. You know, I will miss one thing when she's gone, and that is careening into the abyss because of that boink.
Well,
soundtrack.
Let's not forget, too, Susie named two things on my show. One is Saki Timmy,
mm-hmm.
and the other was, I'll be damned, I can't remember.
I know. I can't remember either.
But I love that you're a big part of the show even when you're not here.
Love being part of it. Glad that you could join us here. Really appreciate it. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk more SCOTUS, so stick around. We'll be back right after this.
Hot enough for you? Tired of hearing that question? It's certainly hot enough to damage your lawn and plants. Allen Outdoor Solutions can put in an irrigation system, save your landscaping, and save you from having to drag hoses in this heat. I've known Steve Allen for years. That's why I put my name with Allen Outdoor Solutions. Call 314-647-4800. 647-4800. Check the website and see everything Steve can do for you. AllenOutdoorSTL.com. You can spend a lot of restless nights trying to figure out how you're going to make all those credit card payments. Why not consolidate all your debt into one manageable payment? My friends at Homestead Financial Mortgage can help with a cash-out refinance. Contact them today. Take the first step in regaining your financial freedom. Use my website, Larry.HomesteadFinancial.com. Take charge of your financial future. Go to my website, Larry.HomesteadFinancial.com. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit, and if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be.
Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beale. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
If you don't love the Supreme Court now, stick around. You may love them the next time they issue a ruling. Hello there, folks. You're listening to the Larry Connors, USA show. This is Susie Moore filling in for him while he is out of town. And this has been a big week for Supreme Court news. Of course, it's the last week of June, and this is when they hand down a lot of their biggest decisions each year. Last year, the Dobbs decision was, of course, the big decision that came down, I think, like the second to last week of June. But anyway, today was the last day of decisions from the Supreme Court for this term, and they issued three of them. Two of them kind of go together, but the first one that they issued, I wanted to talk about a little bit. It was called 303 Creative, and it had to do with a website designer in Colorado who is a Christian and basically said she objected to designing websites that for gay marriage, not providing services for people who happen to be gay, but specifically designing websites for to celebrate gay marriage. And of course, Colorado has a law that basically prohibits discrimination against LGBTQ, etc. customers. So, you know, there was a problem here because they were saying that because of that law, she couldn't refused to design websites for gay marriage. And, of course, it's made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in a 6-3 decision this morning, the court said, no, that's unconstitutional. That's basically compelling somebody, compelling their speech, and compelling them to basically embrace and celebrate a certain belief that they don't adhere to, and that's not proper. 6-3 split is not surprising. It's the conservative justices, and the dissent is the liberal justices on the court. So this particular split happened to be along ideological lines. Although I think the reasoning underlying the court's decision, they can make a strong argument, doesn't have to do with ideology, but rather adherence to the principles in the Constitution. Justice Gorsuch is the one who authored that decision. And he had some good language in there that I wanted to share with you. He says, the First Amendment's protections belong to all, not just to speakers whose motives the government finds worthy. In this case, Colorado seeks to force an individual to speak in ways that align with its views, but defy her conscience about a matter of major significance. In the past, other states in Barnett, Hurley, and Dale have similarly tested the First Amendment's boundaries by seeking to compel speech they thought vital at the time. But abiding the Constitution's commitment to the freedom of speech means all will encounter ideas that are misguided or even hurtful. And I think that kind of encapsulates the tensions that surround these First Amendment cases. Number one, whether certain statements, whether people should be prohibited from making certain statements that others find hurtful or disagreeable or these days wrong, misinformed. Disinformation, that seems to be the angle that a lot of folks, particularly those in the government, are taking. Obviously, the whole idea behind protecting free speech is to protect even that speech that we don't agree with. And this is sort of a corollary to that, is can you compel somebody to say or embrace or celebrate or participate in something that goes against their conscience? And this case clearly holds no, you cannot. So, of course, I'm sure there's going to be a hue and cry from the left about that. I know I saw headlines characterizing it as the Supreme Court rules to take away LGBTQ rights. It's not taking away anybody's rights at all. It's saying this person who doesn't agree with the concept of gay marriage isn't going to be forced against her conscience to celebrate it by designing a website that celebrates it. And I think most people, if they're being honest, brokers have to recognize that, that there's a certain point at which you have to draw that line and not compel people to embrace and join in with whatever speech you agree with. So I think the court got it right there. Their other decision was a 6-3 decision as well, and I think it was combined cases having to do with student loan forgiveness. This was a big one, too. As people will possibly recall, during the pandemic, Joe Biden issued an executive order that basically said under the HEROES Act, this is an emergency situation, so we're going to suspend people's debt obligations, their student loan debt obligations. Now, I mean, I'm like anybody. I would rather not have to pay back any student loan debt. It's a lot of money. I have a daughter in college right now. It's a lot of money. And so there's that impulse of, gee, it would be nice not to have to pay that back, wouldn't it? But the thing of it is, when you take out a student loan, you're entering into a contract and you're saying, okay, provider, if you agree to give me this money and fund my education, then I am agreeing to pay you back. It's a basic contract. It's one that you know, most people have to understand at a fundamental level. And yet here's the government saying, nope, you know what? We're going to cancel that. You don't really have to pay back the debt that you incurred and obligated yourself to. We're going to take care of that. And what does we're going to take care of that mean? That means we, the taxpayers, are going to take care of that. So that means that a bunch of people who never went to college, or who went to college and already paid for their college, or who are thinking about going to college but maybe are holding off because they know right now they can't afford it, are going to be paying for your college because you don't feel like you should have to. I mean, it's a naked power grab. It's a naked appeal to the voters to try and curry favor with particularly younger people and get them to vote Democratic because, hey, look what the Democrats did. But there's a bigger problem with it in addition to the fact that it completely violates contract law, and that is the president doesn't have the authority to do that. The way our Constitution is set up, and if you're going to school or wanting to go to school, maybe you will learn this. The way the Constitution is set up, the powers are separated. And the executive, the president, has certain powers, but Congress has the powers to deal with this sort of thing. And this is what the court recognized in this decision, saying the HEROES Act does not authorize the president to implement this relief plan. And again, I know there's going to be a hue and cry, but again, I think the justices got this right. Of course, it's an ideological split. The 6 conservative justices ruled in favor or signed on to this ruling, and the 3 liberals are dissenting it, but let's see. One of my colleagues at Red State, Strife, who does great work on particularly some of the legal cases and Supreme Court rulings, before this ruling came down, had some observations to share. And as he pointed out, what's at stake is whether Congress even matters. Making the leap from postponing principal and interest payments in the case of a self-inflicted emergency is one thing. Dipping into the nation's bank account to buy votes is something entirely different. And if the court were to find that the president had the power to do this, then that would completely gut the underlying concept of Congress having a role as the legislature to make these types of decisions. And that's something that people need to be clear on about this. The Supreme Court isn't saying there's no relief that can be had. There's no way that anything can be done to provide some sort of debt relief. But if it's going to be done, it needs to be done the proper way through the proper channels, and that's through Congress. Chief Justice Roberts wrote for the court, and in his decision, he says, however broad the meaning of waive or modify, which is language in the HEROES Act, that language cannot authorize the kind of exhaustive rewriting of the statute that has taken place here. The secretary also appeals to congressional purpose, arguing that Congress intended to grant substantial discretion to the secretary to respond to unforeseen emergencies. On this view, the unprecedented nature of the secretary's debt cancellation plan is justified by the pandemic's unparalleled scope, but the question here is not whether something should be done. It is who has the authority to do it. Again, this is the court adhering to the principles in the Constitution, letting folks know, look, if you're going to go about doing this, you've got to go about doing it the right way. Same with immigration. Congress is the one that has the authority and the obligation to act if they want to change these things up. Now, setting aside the fact that, you know, one could argue that part of the problem with student debt is that college is so expensive, and part of the reason college is so expensive is because the government got involved in the first place to try and underwrite these loans rather than letting private lenders determine the amounts that they're going to loan. And so this sort of became a sort of a giant slush fund. That's something that we could probably spend hours talking about. But the bottom line is this. The president does not have the authority, even in the case of an emergency, to indefinitely suspend the obligations that people voluntarily incurred in order to secure finances so that they could go to college. So consider that one another good decision by the court. One of the things that I do or enjoy doing, because I am a reformed lawyer, a recovering attorney, when these decisions come down, is taking a look at them and trying to kind of distill them to the basics. Because what ends up happening is the Supreme Court, which is, you know, populated by justices who have major legal training and years of experience, usually sitting on the bench, issues these decisions, and a lot of times they're long. I think the affirmative action decision is 237 pages long. So it's very difficult for lay people to get what's really going on here, and particularly when you have news agencies and outlets that are characterizing in certain ways, you have to kind of rely on that. So I like to give people a skinny on SCOTUS, basically just saying, here's the case, here's the ruling, here's the justices who voted which way, here's what the issue was. And so I've been providing that each day. And so yesterday's included the rundown on the affirmative action case, also included a rundown on a very technical case about the Lanham Act and whether or not it applies overseas. And then last but not least on the Groff versus Joy case, which was a postal worker who, because of his faith, didn't want to work on Sundays. And originally his employer was able to accommodate him, but it got more complicated as time went on. And so they said, no, we're not going to be able to accommodate you anymore. And he challenged that. And the Supreme Court basically said, yeah, there's a point at which an employer can say, uncle, cry uncle, this is too much. We cannot accommodate this person's religious beliefs and give them an exemption for this because it's too much of a burden on our business. But the test that has to be applied is one that's basically like a substantial burden, a significant burden. It can't just be a minimal inconvenience. So they sent it back to the lower courts to determine whether or not this was for sure a substantial burden on this employer. We're going to take a quick break here and come back and talk right at the end about climate change, one of our favorite topics.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Wow, that was my reaction when I walked into Napoli C, now open on the streets of St. Charles, right next door to Napoli 3. And Napoli C is like walking into a two-level submarine. Fish just outside the portholes. The menu is going to be filled with various seafood, lobster, crab. Good luck with choosing. Napoli C is now open on the streets of St. Charles. Join me at any Cafe Napoli. Clayton, Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles are right next door, Napoli C.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Napoli C, it's in my neck of the woods. I'm going to have to go check it out one of these days. And I suspect that along with the seafood there, they probably serve tasty cocktails. And those are probably served on ice, but maybe not for long, because guess what, folks? The climate change alarmists are coming for your ice cubes. You know, first it was the gasoline powered vehicles, and then it was the gas stoves. Now they're saying ice cubes are part of the problem. I'm not kidding. There's an article titled "Climate Friendly Cocktail Recipes Go Light on Ice," and this is from a scientific journal. It argues that due to so-called anthropomorphic or man-made climate change, it's time to put an end to enjoyable amounts of ice in your favorite cocktail. For years, the hospitality industry has seen diners clamoring for foods that prioritize climate-friendly practices, such as local and seasonal ingredients that are grown or raised with carbon footprints in mind. Yet cocktail culture hasn't been hit with the same scrutiny. As the American West experiences water scarcity and energy prices remain volatile, the protocol for properly made cocktails doesn't look sustainable. Is it possible to make satisfying cocktails without so much ice? Now, never mind the fact that, you know, it basically takes, you know, a certain amount of water to make a certain amount of ice, and, you know, that kind of replenishes itself in the process. These folks want you to know that having ice cubes in your drink is contributing to climate change. So if you're like me and you like your drinks cold, you like your drinks chilled, I know this is really gauche, but I even drink red wine with over ice. Quentin just rolled his eyes at that one. I know it's terrible. My father used to drink beer over ice. I like my drinks chilled. So my response to the well-intentioned, I'm sure, admonitions from the climate change crowd that, you know, in order to be respectful of the environment, we really need to cut down on our ice consumption is, you can take it from my cold because I've been holding a chilled glass dead hands. No, it's not going to happen. Sorry, folks. Appreciate you all tuning in. You've been listening and watching Larry Connors USA. I'm Susie Moore. Privileged that I got the chance to fill in for Larry. Remember to go to his website and check it out. Subscribe, share, and remember our pledge. One nation under God.